Well, hello again there, folks. So I thought I'd share a few thoughts. I'll do a podcast, a little mini podcast for a change on what's happening with reform, funny enough, and Rupert Lowe and Nigel Farage and whatnot. And because over the last year or so, since reform took off and became a thing, like I've never really expressed any kind of excitement about it, other than them being a way to cripple the Tories. But I was even then kind of dubious because they kind of were just Tories. But what I really dislike, or was hesitant about, was the presence of Nigel Farage. And it's difficult though, because if you're in Britain and you're doing content and all of this, there's a large group of people there who really like Nigel Farage, and I'm not one of them. But you don't want to get into the position where you're purely spy. You can be accused of being purely spiraling, or you're just blackpilling, or all the rest of it. And you kind of been through the same sort of arguments over and over again over the years, and so when you see the play being, the pieces on the board being set up once again, and you think you can kind of see where this is all going to go just because it has done so in the past, and you kind of, as I did, just decided to sit it out and do and say nothing. And then now we see what's happened over the last sort of weekend, the last few days, is that it looks like reform is kind of fallen apart. And this comes on one of the not for the first time. There was Benjamin Habib, I think he's called, and now it's Rupert Lowe. Now, what they both have in common is that they were getting a little bit too right wing. They were bordering on a kind of ethno nationalism. And what I will say here is that in Britain, we don't really live in a free country at all. We live in a kind of soft police state. And so, look, I understand it. I understand how careful everybody has to be. You can't you can't have whatever the edgiest take is on Telegram. You just can't do it in actual politics, or if you've got any kind of platform, or it is what it is. You've got to be a realist about it. But nevertheless, some of these men in reform, they did kind of push the envelope a little bit, and it was great. And you think, okay. And my sort of take on this was like, well, especially around Christmas, or just after Christmas, when you had Elon Musk switched from focusing on it was a kind of bait and switch, where in America they'd had this whole uproar about H-1B visas and cheap Indian labor and Elon Musk and all the rest of it. And then they pivoted to the rape gangs in the immigrant rape gangs in Britain, and it became this huge story in the mainstream. A lot of people were talking about it left, right, and centre. I had like sort of family and friends saying they're glad this is being addressed and everything. And that was when I first began to notice really Rupert Lowe, and he'd been around. He was making the most hardcore statements on legal immigration and mass deportations and all of the rest of it. And I thought, well, this is okay, this is good news. And there was an element that I thought, because again, I just don't like or trust Farage. And I'll come on to that in a moment. And I thought maybe this is part of the general vibe shift. And it's connected with what's going in. Like what's happening in America, where the leftism has been broken, and we're getting these real sort of edgy populist takes are entering the mainstream, and maybe this is now going to be tolerated. Maybe Farage and Reform are set to be the face of that in Britain. And I've actually written about this on the blog as well, like a wider geopolitical scenario where Britain becomes airstrip one for America. And to be honest, that might still happen. But what's happened is that there's been this kind of convoluted, sort of stoked up drama that's happened. and Rupert Lowe is now not being completely non-personed, as was before him Habib. And this is a pattern of behavior where it always goes in this direction. It always goes in the direction where the people who are saying things we want pushed into the mainstream, what the average British person is thinking. For one reason or another, they are always the ones that get bumped off. They are always the ones who are shown the door into the wilderness. And there's a long history of this with Farage. And whenever Farage's name comes up, you always get these clips going around of him saying proudly that he was the man that broke the BNP. And then there's been other instances, and there's other clips of Farage where he says again proudly that it is because of him there hasn't been a far-right insurgency in the United Kingdom. And somehow people have managed to, not everyone, because obviously these clips are well known, but somehow huge sections of people have managed to compartmentalize that. And with Farage, there's two things to touch on here. The first is he speaks to a certain sensibility within, I would say, the English more than the Scottish or the Welsh, but he speaks to a certain sensibility of Middle England. He is relatable in that way. He's got the barber, he's got the dog, he likes to sit outside and have a pint. He's got this sort of toad of Toad Hall, the affable land, lord of the land, and all of this kind of thing. And so the English in the miasma of sort of clown world of the UK, Farage cuts through with that persona. It works for him, and so he's able to shore up a lot of his support because he's kind of like a lighthouse. He's kind of like a candle in the dark, and he's attracting all of these people because it's something that they recognize from the old days, from the before times. And so he's very popular. He's probably the most popular politician in the country. But is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because after decades, like literally nothing whatsoever has been achieved. And when you drill down beyond that, beyond these kind of the shire sort of yearnings of England, which Farage taps into, despite the fact that he is just like a Thatcherite man of the City of London and finance and all of this, the facade works. So when you actually get into the political mechanics, it actually becomes all about a public relations pitch. So everything that Farage does, for example, he was put on a spot recently on somebody was at Winston something or other. He was in a pop band, the Mumford and Sons, and Farage was forced to concede that given the change in demographics, for reform and the British right wing would have to make peace with Muslims in the country because like that was just the direction of travel. And of course, Farage is not in any way supportive of any kind of policy that would turn that around. And of course, you get where the chairman of the party who bought it out is a Muslim himself. And so it's all just about this kind of politicking without any substance there. It's all about PR. It's all about how we can get through the next podcast interview, the next interview without really any substance. It's just the vibe. But when you're actually sort of forced to dig in on it, he will immediately contort himself into the position of giving everything away. But I think it's worse than that still. And it's as if it's the what's got been put in place are these tripwires. Just take, for example, the fact that of this populist party for the native British, it is coded as standing up for the white British, the natives. That's how it's presented. But then what they do is kind of put a tripwire in, put a failsafe in by making this Muslim the chairman. And it immediately means that there's limit. It's like when they put those speed blockers on cars, so you can't go over 100 miles an hour or something, even though it's a Lamborghini or a sporty BMW. You put your foot down and you realize there's some kind of limiter on it, so you can't go over a certain speed. That's exactly what that was. And it's impossible to think of it as anything else. It's as if they've deliberately, like, this is their version of what the Tories did with Kemi Badenoch, where it's like we can, on the one hand, pretend that we're not racists and present this, wheel this person out as a symbol of that. But on the other hand, in actual terms of doing politics, it's also like an inbuilt sort of blue ball effect, where not to be too crude about it, but it's limiting there. And so you have to think, where are they going? Because he's ruled out, for example, mass deportations of the illegal immigrants, and Rupert Lowe and Ben Habib were all on board with that. And so it's hard not to kind of get the impression that this is just literally gatekeeping, And what I don't like about it is that when we go back, this is nothing new. So this gets back to what I kind of touched on right at the beginning. And the reason why I didn't get on board with this particular Reform Farage rodeo is because I've already been on it many times before. I remember the same happened with UKIP, where the Brexit happened, then Farage just walked away from it all. After he built up this huge momentum, huge seismic changes, and then he just walked away from it all. But on the subject of Brexit, I posted something on social media about Brexit and the geopolitical climate at the moment, when you look at what's happening with the European Union and things. You could say that Brexit is being vindicated in a sense. You could see that in with Trump's America and the European Union, where they're going, armaments and all of this, Britain not being fully signed up to one or the other puts us in a bit of a decent position. Now, I'm not going to get into all of that here, but that point was immediately kind of counter-signaled by one or two people who said, well, at the end of the day, it's because of Brexit that we got the Boris wave coming in. We got like immigration coming in, broke 1 million because of Brexit. And my sort of counterpoint to that was that actually, though, if you look back, remember Farage pointing at all of the immigrants coming in? The context of that at the time was Turkey joining the European Union and the Syrian sort of refugee crisis. Angela Merkel had just flooded Germany with all these refugees. So the idea was that we can avoid that by leaving the European Union, getting control of our borders. So that was what was sold to the British people. But there is a counterpoint to that, and it cannot be dismissed. And it's that all along, the likes of Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage were talking about a global Britain, a kind of Singapore on Thames, in which, and Farage said this, he found that if people were coming in to fill the skills gaps in Britain, he preferred if they were people from the Commonwealth rather than Polish people or Romanians or whatever. And when you look at the post-Brexit era, the immigration just goes from places like India and Africa, just goes through the roof. And so there's I'm not entirely convinced, because when you look at the numbers, it's clearly all over the place, all over the Western world, and it's also after the COVID-19 thing. After that, immigration goes sky high, maybe to soak up the quantitative easing with people thing, maybe just soak up all of the money that they print, the inflation or whatever. So that you can go either way on that. But it was clearly the case that the British people thought they were voting to reduce immigration. But can you really say that about Farage and all of these Tories? Again, they are just Thatcherite neoliberals. And they were telling us at the time that they would be bringing in these people from them. So I'm not entirely sold on that argument, but the point is, it is there. It is a thing. And it's you can say that actually the what I'm getting at here is there's a good argument to be made that Brexit itself was just this kind of neoliberal Tory con trick, and Farage would have been right at the heart of it. This is not how people tend to view it, but it's a good argument. And the reason why I bring that up is because whatever you say anything negative about Farage, Brexit will be thrown back in your face. And people will say, well, if it wasn't Farage, we wouldn't have got Brexit, which is probably true. But whether Brexit, like what we actually got out of that and what the intention of it was, is up for debate. I'm not sure either way on that, but the point is it's very grey and it's very murky. And especially when you bring in people like Boris Johnson and the rest of them who got on board with that, there seems as if there was an issue to get out of the European Union and turn us into this kind of globalised UK thing. And so then you have the Brexit Party itself, another one where you build up this big head of steam, a big load of momentum that goes. And so by the time reform came around, I was just completely burned out with this and actually sick of the sight of Nigel Farage. And I saw this meme that was going around on Twitter, and it was all of the people who Farage has been involved with and all of these different parties over the years, and they were all in heaven. And now Rupert Lowe was kind of being invited up. You know, there was Paul Nuttall was there. There was Godfrey Bloom was there. Jacob Rees-Mogg's sister was there. So many of these, and you completely forget who they are. Suzanne Evans from UKIP was there. All of these people, even Kilroy Silk was in it. And you get all of these people who are now in sort of in political heaven because they've had their careers destroyed by Farage. And all of them had one thing in common, and all of them were further to the right than Farage. Every last one of them, man or woman, were to the right of Farage. And yet they're all dispensed with. And it's as if whatever Farage is involved with is a kind of cul-de-sac. Like in the garden, you'd make these slug traps where, you put a pot and put some beer in it, and the slugs would be attracted, and then they'd drop in there. And you could get them all contained in one place and then throw it away. And that's kind of like what it's like. I hate to be so disparaging about all these people. I mean, to be fair, they are more sort of Tories than nationalists themselves, but they were at least seem to have the best interests of the country in heart. They were at least trying to push things further to the right. And now they're all neutralized because they came in contact and involvement with Farage. And Farage is the one who was responsible for that. It wasn't like they were, it wasn't like Labour or Hope Not Hate or these things were carrying out hit pieces on them. It was because of personal disagreements and stoked up nonsense with Farage himself, just like with Rupert Lowe, who was now having to speak to the police. And when you dig into it, he's supposed to push somebody. It's all this convoluted garbage. And I just can't pretend there isn't a pattern here. I can't pretend that the what could have been all of this sort of talent on the right is being sort of directed into this cul-de-sac where they're all neutralized by Nigel Farage. And then you've got the wider issue on top of that, which is the general demoralization on the right. So everybody is sick of the Tories. We know we all hate the Tories and all of this. We know they're scumbags. And it's like, well, okay, we need something else, some other vehicle. If you even still believe in the political process, which many people don't, and it's precisely because of these shenanigans. But let's just leave that aside for a second. And when you look aside, you look where the country is going to hell. You know, the immigration is absurd and ridiculous. The country's just in a mess. It's disgusting. And Farage will be there with his outlet. As soon as it happens, where the regime seems to be in, the Tories are facing annihilation, then up pops Farage, you know, to kind of in what he will say is that he's going to finish the Tories off once and for all. But it's as if it's more like he wants to keep people engaged until the Tories can get back on their feet. And so in this case, what I can see happening is that the reform is now going to fall apart and fall into irrelevance because of the demoralization has now set in once again. Once again, all of the momentum was built up. Once again, people got excited. Once again, there was memes flying all over Twitter, and there was people making these cool little videos with Greg's pasties and this kind of postmodern aesthetic about how cool Britannia is. All of this got ruled out again with Farage and a pint and a cigarette, the White Cliffs of Dover with Spitfires and all the rest of it. And now it's the plug's been pulled, and it's probably going to all fall in on itself, because what gave it the edge was people like Rupert Lowe, and now he's been whacked. Along with, let's not forget that all of the younger type people were vetted and then destroyed, purged before Farage even came into the party. But then after that as well. So they were in cahoots with Hope Not Hate. Time and time and time again, anybody who was to the right, Nigel Farage, gets bumped off, gets replaced. But more importantly, across the whole of the right wing of the British sort of spectrum, it's like what will set in again is the demoralization and the just giving up. And as it stands now, what will happen is that the Tories will probably cycle out Kemi B and bring in Jenrick, who is already to the right of Farage. He wasn't to the right of Rupert Lowe, of course, but now in kind of mainstream British politics, the Tories will once again, of the mainstream, be viable. They will be the ones to the right. And so, in a sense, you know, from the beginning, people were talking about how reform would end up merging with the Tories, but maybe they don't need to. Maybe they just need to kind of self-immolate themselves under Farage's guidance to the point where, well, they'll just kind of let it dissolve away and people will drift back, demoralized, depressed, and exhausted back into the Tories. And this is why I don't get excited about Farage. This is why I just see him as a curse. An absolute curse on the British right, and he's been like that for a long, long time. I did a little tweet where I said Farage has cancelled more right-wing careers than Labour, The Guardian, and Hope Not Hate combined, and he has. And it's a cycle which I've now seen play out maybe 4 or 5 times, where everybody gets excited, and then the whole thing has imploded. And I don't know any way out of it except to try to do something with a more, if you still believe that anything is possible in politics on the right in Britain, to go for one of these sort of edgier parties to the right of reform. At least you would have a chance of being closer to the leadership. Maybe you can influence something or other. But I just, it's been depressing because to spend a year sitting back and thinking, I know where this is going. I've seen it before. I've seen it before, and it's going to happen again. And here we are. And all the while, I'm conscious that if I kind of spoil the vibe, I'm going to be called blackpilled. I'm going to be called, oh, well, you know, you're not going to, no, nothing's going to change if you're just writing blog articles and doing videos and this kind of thing. And it's like, well, yeah, but I'm just trying to say, don't get too excited because you're going to end up depressed again. And here everybody is now. The hangover is here. And I just think it's sad. And I just think Farage is a curse on this country. I understand what the appeal is, I get it, but you have to wake up. And it's like, see, it's not just about the minor details of who said what to who in this particular case with Rupert Lowe. All you got to do is zoom out and look at the cycling here. Look at the long history. It's a rise and fall, the rise and the fall, the rise and the fall, and then with people just folding back into the Tories, and that'll probably happen next. And the Jenrick and the Tories will be there to hoover up all of these votes for the Tories again. And once again, it's been Nigel Farage kind of orchestrate. I cannot put it any other way than orchestrating everything. And I don't look, I don't want to be, I'm not, I don't want to just depress everybody. But this is at the end of the day just politics. And I think this should be pretty obvious by now, you know. But thankfully, my readers and subscribers are easy to talk to like that. I don't think there's too many of them who are taken in by this stuff. But yeah, I generally, when it's the cut and thrust of it in articles and things, I tend to give a mildly kind of negative framing or something Farage, but not to come straight out with it. So yeah, this is why I don't like it. This is why I don't trust the bloke. I'm not going to trust whatever he does in the future either. And I suspect, I mean, don't get me wrong, I suspect that reform will limp on for a bit longer, but and then it'll crumble, and then there'll be something else coming in. I mean, I have seen some takes that the Trump administration wanted Farage in, which I kind of, as I said before, I kind of entertained that a little bit. But you even had Elon Musk saying that Farage wasn't cut out for the job. Now, what conversations went on behind the scenes? Because Farage had just been over to see Trump, and when he came back, Musk was pushing Rupert Lowe. So, and now, lo and behold, Rupert Lowe, a couple of months down later, there's been this whole sort of plot against him. You even and he's gone. This is it. And so you people just have to sort of be honest about what's going on here, you know. Let's like let, well it's not so much me or the people who listen to me, or it's the people out there, you know. If you see them getting too carried away with Farage, you're in this situation where it's like, oh God, they're going to be crying on my shoulder in a few months' time, and I can't be bothered with that. I cannot be doing it anymore. But okay, Nigel Farage, yeah, I'm not a fan.